This is the Convict Australia podcast. Thank you for tuning in. It was 1874 when John Devoy, a former leader of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, known as the Fenians, received a letter from a convict in New Holland. It was from a fellow Fenian named James Wilson, who implored Devoy to save him and the other men serving hard labour in the colonies for conspiring to liberate Ireland. His desperate plea began, quote, "Dear friend, remember this is a voice from the tomb. For is not this a living tomb? In the tomb it is only a man's body that is good for worms, but in the living tomb the canker worm of care enters the very soul. We ask you to aid us with your tongue and pen, with your brain and intellect, with your ability and influence, and God will bless your efforts, and we will repay you with all the gratitude of our natures. Our faith in you is unbound. We think if you forsake us, then we are friendless indeed." End quote. Moved by his impassioned plea, Devoy took the letter to his good friend John Boyle O'Reilly. And so the two began a cunning plot to rescue six convicts from their exile on the other side of the world. It would take 2 years of meticulous planning before they were ready to execute the most audacious prison break Australia had ever seen. The six convicts were Thomas Durra, Martin Hogan, Michael Harrington, Thomas Hassett, Robert Cranston, and of course, James Wilson. All were Irish rebels that had been arrested and charged for conspiring to overthrow British rule in Ireland. They had been captured and sentenced in 1867 and spent time in some of England's worst prisons before being shipped to New Holland, arriving the 10th of January 1868. The ship was the Hougoumont, and it was to be the last vessel to bring convicts to New Holland. There were 62 Fenian political prisoners in total who arrived as convicts that day, but since then most of the Fenians had received pardons. Despite their desperation to escape, their behaviour up until that point had been exceptional. They hadn't given authorities any cause to suspect what was afoot. For years they had toiled away, day by day, and many had been given great freedoms in their movements and work placements due to their good conduct. Leading up to the escape, the only ones working inside Fremantle Prison were Cranston and Hassett, who had been assigned as constables. They could come and go without the usual pass. Wilson and Harrington were working down at the sea jetty. Hogan was painting the controller's house, and Durra was in and out of the prison working as a messenger. Easter Saturday was marked as the day of the Great Regatta. Perth would be alive with activity for the event. People from all over Western Australia would visit to watch and take part in the festivities. There was to be all sorts of races: the amateur dinghy pulling race, two-oared gig race, first-class yacht race, canoe paddling race, dinghy pulling race, and much more. Perth would be buzzing with such a hive of activity going on that no one would notice six convicts quietly slipping out of the colony. Or that was their plan. At about 8 a.m. of the morning of the regatta, Cranston left the prison and strolled down to the jetty where Wilson and Harrington were working. They had been assigned to quarrying and dressing stone for the new dock. Cranston confidently strolled up to the work party, swinging a key around and around on his finger. He boldly approached Buller, the warder, and informed him that Wilson and Harrington were needed to assist in the removal of some furniture from Government House. Cranston assured him that it shouldn't take too long. Buller hesitated at first, but seeing that Cranston had the key, he agreed to let them go. The rest of the convicts had no problem slipping away from their work assignments and were soon picked up by carriages. The carriages had been hired by four men going under the names Collins, Jones, Johnson and Taylor, who had all sailed to New Holland separately. Collins had arrived 5 months beforehand to make preparations for the escape. His real name was Breslin, and he was in charge of orchestrating the land operations of the plot. Later, Jones arrived and stayed in a separate hotel in Fremantle. The two men were only seen a few times in each other's company, not enough to raise any suspicions. Closer to the date of the escape, the other two gentlemen arrived. Breslin had hired a buggy and two horses. Jones borrowed a saddle horse, and one of the other men hired a horse and a two-wheeled trap. Each man had his set task to carry out before the due date. Every little detail had been thought of, and on the day of the escape, the men had artfully collected arms, ammunition, clothing for the prisoners, horses, saddles, carriages, and everything they would need to get the convicts and themselves out of the colony. Once the six men were all safely in the carriages, they sped off at great haste towards Rockingham, a distance of 14 miles. Sometime between 9 and 10 a.m., Hogan was found missing from the controller's house, where he was supposed to be painting. Around the same time, Cranston was discovered missing. The superintendent of the prison had told the chief warder that Cranston was not permitted to leave the prison that day, as the store's office would be closed. So when they couldn't find him within the jail, they knew something was up. Word was quickly sent around that two Fenians were missing, and before long, that number had increased to six. Reports reached the police that some carriages had been seen going at an immense speed towards Rockingham, and someone recalled that an American whale ship was seen just off the coast there. This was the Catalpa that O'Reilly had purchased to rescue the men. He had chosen a whaling ship, as it wouldn't arouse suspicion, as whaling ships were often seen along the coast of Australia. He himself had escaped Australia in a similar vessel. Most of the crew that had been hired to make the rescue attempt were not aware of their real mission. The captain, however, knew of the plan and had helped select the vessel, equip it, and organise the stowing. There was only one Irishman on board who was part of the scheme, and that was Dennis Duggan. He was listed as the ship's carpenter to disguise their mission. As they neared Rockingham, they passed a proprietor named Mr. Summers, who was casually standing in the entrance of his hotel. As the men drove towards him, he shouted out, quote, "What time will the Georgette be at the timber jetty?" End quote. The blood drained from Breslin's face, and he responded, quote, "Is the Georgette coming here?" End quote. Mr. Summers shouted back, quote, "Yes, she's due now," end quote. The Georgette was a large steamer that could cause potential problems for them. Breslin pushed the horses into a gallop and they raced towards their destination. Captain Anthony had come to shore on a boat with the crew and was anxiously waiting for them. The crew was still unaware of what was afoot. The crew watched Captain Anthony as he paced back and forth, wringing his hands and furtively looking about. They knew the captain had been acting strangely, and there was talk amongst them that perhaps he was planning to smuggle illegal goods. Finally, he gave the order to push the boat back out onto the water and told them not to be afraid. The crew looked at each other in alarm. At 10:30, the prisoners finally made it to the beach. The crew watched as the prisoners jumped from the traps, grabbing their weapons, and ran towards them. In their haste to reach the boat, the wind blew open their coats to reveal prison garb. The crew were shocked into silence, believing they were about to be attacked. They immediately grabbed anything they could use as a weapon and held them up high to show that they wouldn't be overcome easily. Then the captain barked the order to stand down. Confused, the crew lowered their weapons. As soon as the prisoners were on board, the crew began to row to the sound of the captain spurring them on with urgent cries of, quote, "Pull as if you were pulling a whale," end quote. The prisoners sunk down as far as they could to the bottom of the boat. They weren't even half a mile from shore when they saw eight mounted police officers reach the beach. They pressed on, and at 5 p.m., just as they were reaching a dangerous reef, the winds picked up. The sky turned an angry grey colour, and ocean swell pushed their little boat about violently. Water crashed over them, soaking them to the bone, and they feared that the boat would become swamped. Every time the boat rose upon the crest of a wave, they could see the catalpa still miles away. Suddenly, there was a terrible sound. It was the mast snapping off and crashing into the ocean. Luckily, the crew's quick thinking and action saved them from capsizing. As the thunderous waves kept crashing over them, the crew bailed as much water as they could to save them from becoming waterlogged. Exhausted and with no break coming in the weather, they tried to hold their position. By now, the prisoners were extremely sick, and one broke the men's silence by asking, quote, "Captain, do you think we will float through the night?" End quote. Captain Anthony replied, quote, "Oh yes, I've been out on many a worse night," end quote. But the captain had serious fears for their lives. He toyed with the idea of trying to land at Garden Island, but pushed the idea out of his mind as he knew it would mean certain capture. So he tried to fashion a mast using one of the oars. It was now pitch black, and the men could barely see one another. They were extremely tired, hungry, and thirsty, but all their provisions had washed overboard. Just as they thought all hope was lost and that they only had minutes until the little boat would be swamped, the weather turned. The fierce gales suddenly subsided and the waves began to ease. As the sun rose, their confidence and determination returned to them and they began rowing again. They settled into a comfortable rhythm. That was until they spotted the Georgette sailing straight towards them. The captain immediately took down the makeshift mast and the men dragged their oars inside the boat and everyone lay down. They were hoping that the Georgette would think their boat was just a log and sail straight past them. The plan worked and the Georgette sailed towards the catalpa. The men worried that the Georgette might linger there, making them unable to get any closer. They sat there, waiting, bobbing up and down on the ocean for two painfully long, stressful hours. When the Georgette reached the catalpa, they inquired where their small boat was, as it was missing from the cranes. The mate informed him that the captain had gone ashore. The officer from the Georgette then asked if he could come on board their vessel. The mate's response was, quote, "Not by a damn sight," end quote. Thinking that the small boat must have come to shore during the storm, the Georgette turned around and headed back. The mate anxiously looked out at sea, wondering where on earth Captain Anthony and the men were. When the coast was cleared, the crew started rowing again. They had been at it for 2 hours when they spotted a guard ship approaching. It was filled with police. At least 30 of them could be seen on deck and they were heading their way. The exhaustion the crew had felt after hours of rowing was replaced by adrenaline and they put their body and soul into rowing with all that they had. The prisoners armed themselves and leveled rifles in the direction of the guard boat. They were not going down without a fight. When the crew on board the catalpa finally spotted them, they began sailing in their direction to close the distance between them faster. The police realised what was happening and tried to get between the two to cut the boat off. It was a suspenseful race to the ship and luckily the men were able to outrun the guard boat. As soon as they were close, Captain Anthony yelled out to the crew on the catalpa, quote, "Hoist the ensign," end quote. The boat slammed into the ship and the crew scurried into action to secure the boat as quickly as possible. The guard ship was bearing down on them fast. They didn't have a second to lose. The prisoners couldn't wait for the boat to be hoisted up, so they started scaling the side of the ship with their rifles. When everyone was safely on deck, there was a resounding cheer from all the men. When the guard ship reached the catalpa, the prisoners recognised many of the officers and taunted them by farewelling them by name. The police officers knew they had been beat, and they gracefully made their departure and returned to shore. For the next hour, everyone on board the Catalpa were riotous with exultation. The prisoners cheered the captain and all the crew. They were free after years and years of captivity. Captain Anthony, Breslin, and the rest of the men that had spent months planning and stressing over the execution of this plot were finally able to breathe a sigh of relief. They had done it, and they'd accomplished it without a single loss of life. The captain thanked his crew and commended them on their extraordinary efforts, and then he ordered the steward to, quote, "get up the best dinner the ship can afford. We're hungry," end quote. The celebrations went into the night, and everyone on board enjoyed a feast of canned chickens, lobsters, a range of fruits, and boiled vegetables. But by daybreak, the Georgette was seen heading straight for them. As it approached, Captain Anthony could see that the Georgette was carrying a regiment of soldiers who were heavily armed. The Georgette was twice the size of the Catalpa and had been fitted out with big guns. The captain ordered the ensign to be raised again and told the crew and prisoners to ready themselves. When the Georgette came beside them, they fired a single shot at the bow of the Catalpa. Then the captain of the Georgette called out to them to give the prisoners up. Captain Anthony was having none of it. Captain Harvest threatened, quote, "I'll give you 15 minutes in which to heave to, and I'll blow your masts out unless you do so. I have the means to do it," end quote. In which Captain Anthony replied, quote, "This ship is sailing under the American flag, and she is on the high seas. If you fire on me, I warn you that you are firing on the American flag," end quote. Captain Anthony then realised that his ship was drifting closer and closer to Australian waters. He instructed his crew to get to work, and Captain Harvest thought they were preparing to come back to shore, so he started turning his vessel around. When he finally realised what was happening, he followed the ship for about an hour before giving up and heading back to Australian waters. Everyone on board the Catalpa breathed a huge sigh of relief. When the Catalpa finally reached New York City in August 1876, they were met by a very relieved Devoy and O'Reilly, who had been anxiously waiting for them for a long 16 months. The press swarmed them as they arrived, wanting to know every detail of the plot. They had been unsure of what the reaction would be, but they found the atmosphere was one of warmth and enthusiasm. The months of stress and anxiety for the mission had had its effects on the captain. He arrived having lost nearly 40 pounds, with grey hair shining through his once charcoal black hair. But he and all the conspirators had pulled off the most daring prison break in Australian history thus far, and for a long time he was cheered wherever he went. I hope you've enjoyed this amazing true story. If you'd like to learn more, head to the WA Museum Bula Badip, as they have an exhibition of the story of the Catalpa. And if you'd like to see some photos of the men and a picture of the Catalpa, please head to the Convict Australia Instagram page. Links are in the show notes. Till next time. Thank you for listening to the Convict Australia podcast. If you'd like to show your appreciation and get more involved, there are a number of ways you can. The first is by signing up to Convict Australia on Patreon, and you will get some perks like the Convict Australia newsletter. Secondly, leave a review and tell your friends and family. This really does make a huge difference. And lastly, join the Facebook and Instagram group Convict Australia. All the links I've mentioned will be in the show notes. Thank you again. Till next time.